This week on the show, Tyler Sullivan and Jimmy Young join us to break down Super Bowl 51 and what NBA player is getting under Mike Zago's skin. Keep listening to find out. To Be Announced starts right now. And welcome into our Super Bowl preview show. Big game, so no time for pleasantries. Let's get into it. We are joined on the phone right now by Tyler Sullivan. He covers the Patriots for 24/7 Sports. Tyler, thanks for taking the time.
Hey, what's going on?
So the big question this week, I think, for the Patriots is how are they going to match up with Julio Jones? The consensus seems to be right now that it's going to be Eric Rowe with safety help, and you'll see Malcolm Butler on Taylor Gabriel. Is that the best plan for the Patriots, and do you think that's what we'll see?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that seems like probably one of the more logical things. I mean, we had the Malcolm Butler tweet of, like, what was it, like 4 years ago, where he wanted to go up against Julio Jones. And so that kind of sparked up the conversation of, okay, is it going to be Malcolm Butler versus Julio Jones? But really, that's not how the Patriots have done things for the longest time. Usually it's whenever you go up against these big number one receivers, you'll do kind of like what you just illustrated. You'll either take a guy like Logan Ryan or a guy like Eric Rowe and then put some safety help over the top. And that'll basically just try to, you know, not eliminate him, but try to kind of, you know, limit him to what he can do, whatever that number one wide receiver is, whether it's Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, but it's especially when it's those bigger guys. I mean, we look back to just in the AFC Championship game, when it is a smaller, kind of quicker, shiftier wide receiver, that's when Malcolm Butler kind of shifts over there, like Antonio Brown. But in these games, especially if he goes after a guy like Taylor Gabriel, that to me seems more like a matchup for Malcolm Butler. He's more suited to completely shut a guy like him down. And then there's obviously that double coverage there on Jones.
So is it important then? Are people overestimating the importance of the Patriots shutting down Julio Jones? I saw a stat this week in six games this year where Julio Jones was held under 80 receiving yards. The Falcons were 6-0. Are people putting too much attention on Julio Jones in this game?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fantasy football topic. I mean, that's really what it is. You know, people know who Julio Jones is, maybe not necessarily know who Mohamed Sanu, who Taylor Gabriel are. That's basically what it is. I mean, you just look at the big names. You see Julio Jones, you know, he's probably one of the first-round picks in your fantasy league, so everybody knows who he is. So, yeah, obviously he puts an emphasis on him, but going down to the nuts and bolts of it, I think it's a tad overrated. I think that that's fair to say. I mean, you look at it from that aspect that you pointed out, but also just looking at everybody else that they have on that offense. They're not the number one scoring offense, number one offense in the NFL just because of Julio Jones. They have a great running game with both of their backs. They have Gabriel. They have Mohamed Sanu. They're a good offense. And obviously, Matt Ryan there as well, probably going to be the MVP this year. You got more than just Julio Jones, so it does get a tad overrated because even if you do shut him down, Matt Ryan has the weapons to burn you in other places. It might only behoove you to give him only one option, and that way it's kind of a little bit easier for you to identify what you can do on defense. If you look at it from a standpoint of, again, Julio Jones is a guy who you can probably pencil in just to get his, I'm a little bit more concerned about Mohamed Sanu. He seems like a little bit more of a red zone threat for this team. You look at what he can do with that offense. I even liked him when he was with Cincinnati. I like him in that aspect. But also, if you just look at the backfield there, the Patriots are very good against the run, but still, the Patriots, for me at least, they struggle a little bit, and we didn't really get to see this last week because of Le'Veon Bell's injury. But where I think they struggle a decent amount this year is against more of those versatile backs. They're going to do fine against Isaiah Crowell because they know he's just going to be a bruising running back. They'll even do well against guys who are just strictly receiving backs because they know what they're going to do. The guys like Le'Veon Bell, the guys like LeSean McCoy, David Johnson, and those guys are obviously the elite of the elite, but those guys are very good because they're unpredictable. With this Atlanta backfield, they are unpredictable with both of their guys, Coleman and Freeman. I think both of them are very skilled in a couple of different ways on offense. I don't think they're strictly just a downfield runner or strictly just a pass catcher. So they're going to be limited into what they can kind of assume right out of the jump there just because of their unpredictability. So I think, again, this is the reason why their offense is so great and one of the best, if not the best, in the NFL. It's because they're not just good, they're unpredictable as well.
If the running backs are so important, which member of the Patriots defense is best suited to take one of those guys away or maybe minimize the damage?
Yeah, I would say, you know, if you're going to try to minimize the damage on them, honestly, it would probably behoove the Patriots, again, if they just showed a weakness. You know, this is what they used to do with Peyton Manning back when he was, you know, not last year, but even just like a few years ago when he was with Denver. you show them, you give away the run. You let them run the football to get the ball out of Matty Ice's hands. I mean, that is something that they could do in this one. So if anything, they may have a great day running the football, the Atlanta Falcons, but that might be by design for the Patriots. And again, if you want to eliminate them, I think you're going to have, again, a big game from Alan Branch. I think that he's going to have to, again, like he was going to do last week, and I think he did a good job last week, clog up the middle and then just kind of give it enough time for your linebackers, or whether it be your defensive ends in Trey Flowers or Rob Ninkovich or Chris Long, to either get to the quarterback or either get to one of those running backs. But honestly, it might even behoove the Patriots to kind of just let them run the football, feel like they have an opening, and then all of a sudden they can kind of let things flow that way.
Speaking of last week, Chris Hogan went off all over the Steelers' career game. Can the Patriots replicate that against the Falcons with Hogan or somebody else, or will it have to be a by-committee approach offensively for New England?
No, I think that you can have a guy that goes off. Again, you've seen Julian Edelman just do phenomenal things in the postseason. I think Chris Hogan and Tom Brady, it's one of the rare things you see in a first-year receiver in this offense. I mean, I feel like there's been so many times that guys have come into this team and it's taken them a little bit to, whether it's, you know, get the offense or gain the trust of Brady. He seems like he's done it from day one. I remember back in preseason, I believe it was against either the Panthers or it was against the New York Giants, where he caught just a perfect pass in the corner of the end zone for Brady. I mean, Brady couldn't have thrown it anywhere else. It was just a perfect throw, and that was right from the jump in preseason. And they've continued that over the course of the year. I think that he could have a big game there as well. And this is another thing to look at. Bill Belichick talked last week in a conference call talking about, you know, what is the difference between this Falcons defense and then what you saw in Seattle a few years ago. Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, was the defensive coordinator for the Seahawks when they won the Super Bowl and when they faced the Patriots in the Super Bowl. So there are similarities, Belichick said. I mean, you know, their schemes and things like that, it is the same, but the only difference is that they don't have Richard Sherman, they don't have Earl Thomas, they don't have Cam Chancellor. So if you kind of just read between the lines there, we kind of know what they're doing, but it's just a less talented team. So you look at Tom Brady, he basically has the answers to the test, or you would think, and that was something that you saw last week. You know, the Steelers don't necessarily change much in terms of their scheme over the course of, seems like, a handful of years now, and Tom Brady seems to shred them up. So if you give Tom Brady enough background to what you do, he's going to study it like crazy and completely exploit it.
We're talking with Tyler Sullivan of 24/7 Sports. Tyler, the last couple years in the Super Bowl, it seems like there's been a surprise breakout player. Chris Matthews 2 years ago for the Seahawks, Coney Ealy last year for the Panthers. Who's a name that's maybe not on the national radar that could, you know, go up a million Twitter followers come Sunday night?
Yeah, I mean, you want to look at probably, I mean, we all see this team. So is Deion Lewis a big guy? And really, you know, he may be a guy that goes off, but also I would sleep on James White. You know, if you remember back to Shane Vereen in that Seattle game, he finished that game phenomenal. I think he had like 10 catches, just a great effort from him in that Super Bowl. Watch out for James White. I think that he's a guy that we all kind of know around here, but he's not necessarily the LeGarrette Blount who broke records, ran for over 1,000 yards, had double-digit touchdowns, or Deion Lewis, who I feel like a lot of people nationally know just because he's a great story. James White's kind of that forgotten guy. I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of comes out of nowhere and helps them score a touchdown or two and has a pretty good game catching the ball. And then maybe on defense, I wouldn't be surprised if you look at a guy like Logan Ryan. Again, we all know who he is, but nationally, he could come up with a big moment here. Again, I like him. I think he's playing pretty solid here in this playoffs. Again, all of those Rutgers guys seem to be playing out of their minds recently. But I wouldn't be surprised if he has a big game there, too, has a nice interception or something against Matt Ryan.
So, Tyler, do you have a prediction for us?
Yeah, I like the Patriots in this one. And, you know, what was it? All of these Patriots Super Bowls, whether it's win or loss, has been determined by 4 points or less or something like that. I mean, these games have always been close. I've been trying to bang my head, trying to figure out how this game is going to be close. How can the Patriots and Falcons make this thing a close game? Ultimately, I like the Patriots in this one. I like them to the tune of probably, you know, somewhere in the 27-21 range. I think that the Patriots defense is as, you know, I don't know if it's as good as people claim they are, or maybe has the statistics show, allowing about, you know, less than 16 points a game this year, number one in the NFL, where you go into an Atlanta Falcons team where they're averaging 40 points a game in the playoffs. I think that even if the Patriots defense has a bad day, that keeps them in the 20, 21 kind of area, the low 20s in terms of the score. And then I look at this defense, the Atlanta Falcons, and I say Brady should at least easily get low 30s, high 20s on them. So I like them 27-21 Patriots.
There you have it, Tyler Sullivan of 24/7 Sports. Thank you very much for taking the time. You're on Twitter, right, at Tyler Sully?
Yep, at Tyler Sully.
Go find him on Twitter, folks. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Anytime.
To Be Announced is brought to you by SnapCall Sports. Available for both iPhone and Android, the SnapCall Sports app is a chance to prove your sports knowledge, chat with both experts and fans, and win great prizes. SnapCall Sports, creating the game within the game.
And welcome back to To Be Announced. I'm now joined by Jimmy Young. Jimmy, you heard Tyler kind of break it down for us, so now we'll get into the predictions. I know that's the fun part. That's what you were waiting for last week.
I hate predictions. I could talk about the game. No, I'll give you
You're begging for the prediction
Everybody's
last week.
I know, I get how you
So we'll save a score and a winner for the end.
Fair enough.
Although I think it will become apparent from your notes. But
Here I am. I'm going to pick against the New England Patriots. That's not going to happen.
Let's do matchup by matchup. You know, that's the way to do it. And the big one is the Falcons offense versus the Patriots defense. I think that's kind of where everybody says the Falcons can win this game. They have the number one offense in the league. And I talked to Tyler about this. I don't think Julio Jones is as big of a deal in this game as people make him out to be. I threw the stat out before. Six games of 80 or less yards receiving for him. The Falcons were 6-0. He's going to get his numbers. I'm thinking like 7-8 catches, 100 yards, a touchdown. I think he puts those numbers up win or lose. I'm not too concerned about what he does.
I'm concerned about Julio Jones because I think he's still the most talented player on their offense. However, besides Matt Ryan. I do think the Patriots will do a good job of containing him. I don't think he's going to get 100 yards or something.
You don't think around there?
Well, I'm going to say under 100.
Under 100. Okay, first prediction, under 100 for Julio Jones. We're logging these, it's noted.
Because the Patriots' defense, as you know, is that bend don't break defense. They will give you the middle of the field, but they will take away and get tougher as they get closer and closer to the end zone. And again, I think they will do a good job on him. With you guys actually talked about it. He said Logan Ryan on him. I think he's wrong. I think he'll put Malcolm Butler on him and have Patrick Chung over the top.
So we have three different opinions because I think you're going to see...
It could be a rotation,
too. Well, I mean, it's not all going to be solid, but I think you'll see Logan... I think you're actually going to have a Rutgers matchup of Logan Ryan and Muhammad Sanu. You put Butler on the fastest guy, Gabriel. You put Eric Rowe. He's not the best, but he has the size with McCourty over the top. That's the way I...
Could be.
I'm a little nervous with Rowe on Jones, but he does have the size, and size is so important in being a defensive back. McCourty over the top, it should be enough. If they can at least force Jones to the middle of the field and take away the sideline routes, that does wonders. Matt Ryan's passer efficiency drops astronomically when throwing inside the hash marks, and Rowe is big enough to at least body up Julio Jones and force him to the parts of the field where they want him to be, and then Matt Ryan has to make the throws.
It's a good analysis, Alex. You know, that's the beautiful thing about football is we can sit here and we can predict and we can look at the different matchups until they start playing that game because they're going to make in-game adjustments. And again, that's another check mark on the Patriots side of things because there's no better team than making in-game adjustments than Belichick and his staff.
But I don't know if there's a better opponent for that than Dan Quinn, who has that great defensive mind, worked with the Seahawks.
How'd that work out for him?
You know what? It wasn't because of the defense.
No, it wasn't.
They're going to be able to make some good adjustments, too, on the other side of the ball. One more thing before we get over to when Tom Brady's on the field. The running backs are what really scare me if I'm the Patriots for Atlanta, both of them, Tevin Coleman and Devonta Freeman. I think this could be a huge game. It's going to be a rotation because the best way to stop a quick back is to keep fresh legs. But Kyle Van Noy is going to play a big part in this. Shea McClellan, I know Patriots fans cringe hearing that name. He could be a factor, too, because you're going to need those quicker linebackers on the field to take out those running backs. But do you think that will be enough, or do you need to commit Hightower, or do you just, like Tyler said, surrender to the running backs and say, we'll give you that, but that's it?
I don't think Bill Belichick's – I don't think surrender is in his vocabulary, nor is it in Matt Patricia's. Will they have a scheme that allows – that keeps them inside those hash marks, something like that, so if they have to beat them, they have to go right through the middle of the line? That may be possible as opposed to getting them outside. But again, the defense is designed to give up yards.
Right.
But the key, and this has been key for the Patriots every time they played a Super Bowl, can their defense make stops when it matters? They haven't really had a lot of luck with that, except when Malcolm Butler, you know, took advantage of it on the goal line 2 years ago. And that was not a freak play because they had obviously planned for it. But their defense was getting beat down the field, although it did take another miraculous catch by Jermaine Kearse to even get them that far. You know, I've never been as confident about a team, even in 2007, when they went in unbeaten against the Giants.
The difference between that team and this team, and then there's a point I want to get back to, but the difference between that team and this team is that team wasn't playing its best football at the end of the stretch. Remember, right. They had the tough game against Chargers. They had a couple tough playoff games. This team, I really think, has clicked. Right. And like you predicted 2 weeks ago, played their best game of the season in the AFC Championship. Did. They're coming in hot.
Yeah, they absolutely.
Granted, the Falcons are too, but.
Yeah, but you're right. But the defense stepped up in that game against Pittsburgh, I think, is your point. And that is exactly what you expect of a young defense. Now, speaking of young defenses, Atlanta has a very young defense as well. I believe they start four rookies in defense. And, you know, they're not rookies anymore. That's the way I look at it. However, it is still their rookie appearance in the Super Bowl.
Well, here's what's interesting about that.
By the way, who does that play? Right into the hands of you-know-who. That guy.
Belichick has a history of just torching rookies.
And Brady, too.
The interesting stat, it wasn't really a stat, it was a piece on CBSSports.com about the high school rankings of all the starters in the Super Bowl going into college. 61% were not in the top 100 in their recruiting class, 61% of the players in this game. Now, that affects both teams, but a good chunk of the Patriots roster has been there before. For these Falcons guys, they're not these touted high school recruits. This is going to be the biggest game of their lives. And sometimes you say, like with Dont'a Hightower 2 years ago, oh, but he played at Alabama. He played national championships, argue is bigger. Some could argue. These guys went to smaller schools. They weren't highly recruited. This really is going to be a deer in the headlights look for Atlanta. Not saying they can't answer, but I think they'll come out stunned early.
And your point about the high school, I get it. The players that are able to be coached and are dedicated to working hard, that's the kind of player that a Bill Belichick likes, and obviously Dan Quinn does too. And by the way, it shouldn't surprise anybody that you got Thomas Dimitroff and Scott Pioli, who were Patriots executives, in the Falcons front office. And here they are in the Super Bowl. That's not a mistake, people. They understand the type of player you need to get to be effective in the NFL. One of the neatest statistics about this game as we start researching it, the two least penalized teams in the NFL are in the Super Bowl.
And that breaks a trend because the last couple years...
Yeah.
The team that won the Super Bowl was top five in defensive penalties. And you had a 3-year span with the Ravens, Giants, and the Seahawks. The Packers might have been in there. Where the team that led the league in defensive pass interference made a Super Bowl appearance. Yeah. So there's something to be said for being aggressive, but it's interesting to see that trend change. I think a lot of that goes back to the good coaching.
Yes.
But when the Patriots have the ball... Guy I'm looking at this week is Chris Hogan. I think Atlanta doesn't have the depth at the cornerback position similar to the issues that Pittsburgh had. I think Hogan could have a big week, and Edelman killed the Dan Quinn defense last time. I feel like Atlanta's going to key in on Marty Bennett. Watching their two previous playoff games, they really keyed in on the tight end, even when the tight end wasn't effective. I think Bennett's going to draw a lot of coverage, a lot of safeties, maybe some double coverage. It's going to leave these secondary reads for Brady wide open.
Yeah, that's a matchup that everybody's looking at. Keanu Neal, the safety, against Martellus Bennett. One guy that Tyler mentioned that I totally agree with. I think James White could have a big game, an MVP caliber type game in this matchup with Atlanta.
So why would obviously they want to use Deion Lewis in that role. Why would White have a big game and Deion Lewis wouldn't?
Because I think Deion Lewis is more of a traditional running back and James White is a better receiver coming out of the backfield, usually used on third downs. You know that when you convert third downs, that is usually a very good sign that you're moving the football and you're going to win the game.
You know what? Something Belichick loves to do, and it sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. He loves to take the other team's something the other team prides themselves in,
right,
and shove it back in their face. Atlanta has been great this year with the two running back set with both Colvin and Freeman. I wonder if he's going to go White and Lewis just to kind of say, hey, look, we can do this two running back thing too.
I did find one really interesting factoid that I really want to say.
Go for it.
Because it's anti-NFL. It's collective bargaining based, and it really pisses me off.
Is this about the Pro Bowl salaries?
You're close. It has something to do with money. The winning share for the winning team per man in the Super Bowl is $97,000 per man for winning Super Bowl 50. Okay?
So that's last year's number.
That was last year, right? The Cubs, the Chicago Cubs, your World Series champs, received $512,000 per man. That is the biggest inequity in sports. It really bothers me.
Some of those guys, because they had a lot of young players, probably made just about that much that year, might have doubled their salary. So I'll give you this one, too. The winning players in the Pro Bowl last night got a bigger bonus than the Super Bowl losers will get.
What is the one thing
the Patriots have to do well, the one matchup they have to win, the one thing they got to focus on to win this game?
I always go back to the line of scrimmage. I really do. And I think that, especially with Brady, yes, he can pick you apart with 2.1 seconds, okay? That's all he needs to beat you is 2.1 seconds. However, to guarantee that he beats you, give him 4 seconds. So again, I believe that if they can control that line of scrimmage, keep Brady upright, that's what happened in Pittsburgh. You know that's the key. If somehow, some way, Atlanta can devise central pressure on Brady, delayed zone blitzes, stunts coming around up the middle, that's where you can get at him.
So I was about to ask you, your key for Atlanta is going to be the pass rush, I'm guessing?
Yes, I think, we all know watching the Patriots, when they lose, teams have been able to put pressure on Brady.
Vic Beasley, the NFL leader in sacks this year, in one last Brady-Dwight Freeney battle. I'm sure Matt Light will be watching with a lot of interest. I like seeing Dwight Freeney in one last Super Bowl. It'll be interesting. For me, the key for the Patriots is red zone defense. You touched on it earlier. Matt Ryan was over 70% this year, completion percentage. When he gets into the red zone, it drops to 60%. He has one of the largest disparities in the NFL. It really plays the Patriots' bend, don't break defense. I think if they can hold Atlanta to field goals, it should be easy for them. For Atlanta, I got to agree with you. I think the pass rush is big. I also think the in-game adjustments are going to be key. The reason Pittsburgh had so much trouble, they couldn't adjust to what the Patriots were doing with Chris Hogan. I think Dan Quinn is a much smarter coach, a much better defensive coach than Mike Tomlin. I think Atlanta can do it. That being said, the Patriots, every Super Bowl they have played in the Tom Brady era, so not counting the other two because we know what happened against Chicago in 86.
Every
Super Bowl the Patriots
very sad.
Have played in. In the Tom Brady era has been decided by one score.
Right.
And as much as they're hyping up the Patriots in this game, and it's the Patriots versus the NFL, not the Patriots for the Falcons, I am going to, a little similar to Tyler, I'm going to go a little higher scoring, Patriots 35, Falcons 31.
All right, that's interesting. I'm not giving the Falcons as many points. And by the way, this is how I predict, and I do okay with this. I think you passed me in the rankings on Snap Call, by the way. But that's all right. I'll let you do that. Three field goals for Atlanta, two touchdowns. That's 14 and 9, and add that up, that's 23 points. Patriots, four touchdowns. Brady throws for three. They run for one, and they get two field goals. That adds up to 34. So 34 to 23 is the final of this game. That's how I look at it, and we'll see what happens.
To Be Announced is brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Available for both iPhone and Android, the Snap Call Sports app is a chance to prove your sports knowledge, chat with both experts and fans, and win great prizes. Snap Call Sports, creating the game within the game.
No sleep till!
And To Be Announced continues. Super Bowl still a couple days away. The other storyline hanging out there right now comes out of the NBA. One of the league's elite players, at least he was for a time, Carmelo Anthony, reportedly on the block. Joining us to break it all down now of Snap Call Sports is Mike Zago. Mike, how's it going?
It's going well. Glad to be back.
So first off, before we get into the hypothetical trades and the trade machine and salary cap exceptions, yada, 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 how'd this all begin? Why is Carmelo Anthony available?
Well, the Knicks, in truth, just don't have a lot of tradable assets. And if you want to get better quickly, you're going to need to make some drastic moves. Doesn't look like anyone's going to take on Derrick Rose's contract even as a rental, and you probably wouldn't get a whole lot back for him now. Noah is already locked up on a deal that he's making more than he probably should. Courtney Lee isn't all that movable and wouldn't move the needle on getting prospect back or anything. So they don't really have guys to deal. You can't deal Porzingis. You want to build around him, and if you want to get something back, Carmelo is the guy that you can really change the makeup of this team. It's a shame because he's playing very well. You know, the criticism isn't warranted. He's scoring the ball at a great pace. He's one of the probably the top 10 to 20 scorers in the league at worst. But he's the only guy that they could really move to make an impact and change this team.
So it's not so much wanting him out as it is wanting fresh blood in.
I think the media will portray it like Phil and Carmelo, you know, will butt heads, and maybe they do, but I don't think it's as much of that as just, if you're a GM of a team and you want to make your team better and you want to compete with the Cavaliers in the East, how do they do that while his salary is still there? They need to get rid of that. This team isn't working, obviously. They're not a championship contender by any means. Whether you want to say they can sneak into a seventh or eighth seed, that's fine, but I don't think a New York fan base is okay with that. So you really need to break the whole thing down, get a bunch of cap space, get Rose out of town, get Carmelo out of town, bring in some expiring contracts, and see if you can reboot the whole thing.
Part of the problem is, for the Knicks, Melo has a no-trade clause. He said he'd waive it to select cities. The three I've heard the most are Boston, Cleveland, and L.A., go figure. Which do you think would be the best dealing partner for the Knicks?
For the Knicks? Well, I don't think the Cleveland thing makes any sense for the Knicks. I'm surprised it's even out there. If you want to bring in Kevin Love, aren't they really a similar player? I mean, not a whole lot of defense. Yeah, I don't see how it moves the needle. And Love is signed long-term on a big contract, too. So you're not really changing the team. And at that rate, wouldn't you just keep Carmelo in town and try to make a run towards the playoffs and maybe upset somebody in the first round? But
you know, LeBron,
I think the team changes there. Yeah, that is true. But I think more realistic would be the Clippers. Boston, I don't know if they want to bring his makeup into the fold. They don't want to deal that early pick they're going to have from Brooklyn in this draft, and the Knicks are going to probably want that in any kind of deal.
Do you think that's doable for the Celtics without giving up a Brooklyn pick?
If they could do that, then it would be a good deal. They need to make some kind of move that they can get closer to the Cavs. But if I'm Phil Jackson and the Knicks, I'm going to stand pretty firm on wanting that top asset that they have, and I don't see it being worth it if I'm Boston.
So L.A. it is, a process of elimination.
Seems that way, yeah.
Are the Knicks going to get enough back to, and looking way down the road here, 3 years from now, say, okay, the Melo trade worked out, it changed the face of the franchise. Do the Clippers have enough to give back to make that happen?
I think they do. I just wonder, you know, a lot of Knicks fans out there are saying they just want him out of town, period. They don't seem to care what they're getting back. I've heard rumors of, you know, maybe Austin Rivers and J.J. Redick and a protected first-round pick. That stuff is crazy to me. This is one of the top 10 to 20 scorers in the league. He's proven. He's a veteran. He's going to bring the Clippers exactly what they need. Remember, they traded for Jeff Green not that long ago, thinking if we just upgrade the small forward position, this starting lineup's ready to compete with everybody. And they got a first-round pick in that deal. So you would have to wonder, what is Carmelo worth relative to what they need to bring in? I'm thinking you got to have at least two picks in there, plus some young talent, maybe like a Bryce Johnson or something like that, to entice them. But they need assets, and just getting the salary cap off of them doesn't do enough.
Sometimes with these things, one domino needs to fall before everything else can move. We see it often in free agency, but it can apply to trades as well. If Melo's not traded, and we're looking at like 12 hours before the deadline, who's another big name out there, maybe another domino that could fall that increases the Melo trade talks, runs up his value, runs up another team maybe wanting to give up more to get him?
You know, that's the thing. We haven't seen players of this caliber really traded at the deadline, not often at all. You can remember when Chris Paul was about to get traded, all the drama that went on with the Lakers and the Clippers. You know, and you see guys like Timofey Mozgov going for two first-round picks. So I don't even know if anyone else would impact the Melo value, since it's so hard to put a finger on what he's worth to begin with. I think it's more just going to be a matter of how desperate does Phil Jackson feel to validate himself to the fans that he's doing something to make the team better. And it would be a real shame if he just panicked and accepted any deal Doc Rivers and company offered him, just so he could say, hey, you guys wanted Melo out of here, I got him out of here, now you can't complain. So I don't know if it's other teams that are going to impact the value, But the negotiation table is going to be an interesting place over the next few days.
And finally, Mike, you touched on it at the beginning of the call, calling Kristaps Porzingis untouchable. I think a lot of people would agree with that. How does it affect his development? And if you make this trade, are you looking to bring in assets that would be the face of your team? Or are you building this thing around Kristaps Porzingis as your superstar?
He's the guy. You need to build around him. It's hard to hit at the top of the draft. Not everybody works out. And you got a guy that nobody compares to, really. So he can play the four. He can play the five. He's going to bulk up. He's going to get older. They need, and they always have needed, a distributing point guard in New York. They just don't have one. I'm wondering if that's going to be through the draft or with the boatloads of cap space that they have. But you also have to wonder, you know, a guy like Jrue Holiday is a free agent after this year. If they were to bring him in on a big deal, is he enough to move the needle and really get them competing with the Cavs in the East? It seems like they need to look longer term, maybe look to the draft for a facilitating point guard. He and Porzingis can grow together, and then you can fill scorers in around them later. Ironically, Melo would fit well with them down the road, but at this point, they really need to break it down to build it up.
Mike Zago, definitely. Snap Call Sports. If you want to talk more with him about this, Mike, Friday, I believe you're doing the Knicks game?
Tomorrow night. Knicks and Wizards are going to be on. We'll be doing that on Snap Call, so you should join it.
Tuesday night, if you're listening later in the week, on Snap Call Sports, available for the iPhone or Android. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thanks.
That's Mike Zago of Snap Call Sports. I'd like to thank him. I'd like to thank Tyler Sullivan of 24/7 Sports, Jimmy Young of Snap Call as well. I hope this has helped you kill half an hour leading up to the Super Bowl. You're now that much closer. I'm Alex Barth. This has been To Be Announced. Thanks for listening.